Mark Gibney is the Carol G. Belk Distinguished Professor in Humanities at the University of North Carolina, Asheville. He is the author of several books, including Global Refugee Crisis, and the co-author of The Politics of Human Rights, The Quest for Dignity. His latest book is titled Watching Human Rights, The 101 Best Films. It's an analysis of his top human rights films. In 2011, he was named the Distinguished Scholar of Human Rights by the American Political Science Association. Welcome. Thanks very much for your time.
Good to be here, David.
Why did you take on this project?
Well, actually, my colleague Ken Betzalel had convinced me years ago that journals have book review sections and why not a movie film review? So we began. I approached Human Rights Quarterly. I've been on their editorial board for a number of years, and they said, fine. So we now do film reviews in the same fashion that book reviews are done. And then from the film reviews we do for Human Rights Quarterly are all recently released films. The idea for this book was to look in the past, some past films.
Has film been overlooked when we try to comprehend or understand the struggle for human rights?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think there's now a whole host of international human rights film festivals. Human Rights Watch has a major one in London and New York, and then throughout at Asheville at the university. Now we're going to be having our 9th annual Human Rights Film Festival. I think one reason that I like it is that it makes it more personal. It becomes less abstract. Human rights becomes less abstract. There's also this notion that younger people are very visual, right? That they learn by film and things of that sort. And so it's a way of trying to reach students. But I also don't think that, I think a lot of people are like this now. And so I think film is important. I do. And I think there's probably a growing recognition of that.
What role did the Universal Declaration of Rights adopted by the United Nations play in defining a human rights film?
I don't know about a human rights film, but to me, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, 1948, is sort of the end-all and be-all document. I mean, really, I described it yesterday in class as the single most important political document of all time. And so I sometimes get irritated with philosophers who want to go back, you know, what are human rights? And my ready response is, here's the UDHR, Universal Declaration. These are the human rights that are universally agreed upon. We don't need to keep reinventing the wheel here.
What are the issues that you consider at the heart of a human rights film?
Well, you know, it doesn't say in the opening credits, this is a human rights film. You won't find that. I have a fairly broad definition. I also think, though, that most people, when they think of human rights, they equate it with what are called civil and political rights, which would be torture, disappearances, summary executions, and political imprisonment. But most human rights violations in the world, by far, the vast majority are violations of economic, social, and cultural rights. So in this book project, certainly the films that show torture and the like, a film like Missing with Jack Lemmon and Sissy Spacek deals with torture and a summary execution, but there's an effort here to give the full panoply of human rights, particularly economic, social, and cultural rights.
You mentioned Missing, the 1982 film. Your list does include feature films. Are there categories?
Yeah, no, what it is, the major category, the major distinction I have is just two. One is a feature film, which is studio and fictional, including a few animations like Persepolis. So 50 feature films. Most of the films that are listed in the book or analyzed in the book, people will be familiar with. Schindler's List, Missing, Slumdog Millionaire, Gandhi, Midnight Cowboy, first great movie I ever saw in my life. And then the 51 documentaries are not going to be as familiar to people. But the point with the 50 feature films is that there are a number of films that have human rights themes, but it may not be obvious to the viewer. And so what I try to do in my analysis of the film is to bring out sort of the human rights themes that are there.
When you look at the list of feature films, are there some that people would question and wonder, why is this considered a human rights film, whether it be, I don't know, Precious, the 2009 film. That's the film that's based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And I also think it's probably more likely for films that have economic rights as a theme, right? So in Precious, you have this young girl whose education, I mean, the family's living in the poor housing, Section 8 housing. Her education is not sufficient. But these are human rights. But again, we don't normally associate human rights with things like education or housing or healthcare, right? We think of torture and the like. So I think, but again, I also think that people could question a lot of the films, you know, or at least some of them, and also maybe the rank ordering that I have. I mean, the rank ordering was also to get people a little bit exercised about these things. Like, how did you have Precious at number 8 when you, you know, it's like the NCAA rankings here. We try to create some, perhaps some false controversy. But I do think that, I mean, I do have a fairly loose definition of, let's say a liberal definition of a human rights film.
Just sticking with feature films for a moment, you mentioned Schindler's List a moment ago. Many of the feature films that you cite are very well known. Dead Man Walking, is that on your list? Starring Sean Penn from 1995?
Yeah, number 11, David. Number 11 is Dead Man Walking. I mean, let me just give you the first five, even. Schindler's List, number 1. The Lives of Others, about life in East Germany, number 2. Missing, number 3. The Official Story, an Argentinian film about the dirty war there. And then The Killing Fields. That's the top five feature films. But yeah, Dead Man Walking, The Death Penalty. Of course, and it's a terrific film.
The interesting thing about that film is that Sean Penn plays a condemned killer, and he is a killer.
Oh, he's a nasty man. Nasty man. That's what the best part of that film is, that they don't try to make a mistaken identity. Oh, he didn't really do this. He's really a Boy Scout, and he happened to be in the wrong place. No, this is a despicable human being, okay? And yet, the point of this is he has humanity. Right, that's the part of the film that comes out in this thing. As despicable as he is still a human being, and he ought not to be executed by the state.
Are you looking at a specific period in film history?
No, one of the things I'm trying to make the book accessible to viewers now. So some of the older films that I went back and looked at, I'll use two examples. One is The Grapes of Wrath with Henry Fonda. I think you watch that film now and it is interminable. Right? The one scene that resonated with me was when he talks with his mother. He's about to leave the camp and he says something to the effect of, you know, I'll be there when there's injustices. But the rest of the movie looks like something out of the Beverly Hillbillies. It really does. And so I don't include that on this. I have a website called watchinghumanrights.com that I will be including more films, an analysis of films, than I do in the book. And the other one I was going to mention is All Quiet on the Western Front. That is a film that at the time it came out, I am sure it was a fantastic film. But for modern audiences, I would never show something like that in class. I think the acting is wooden, the stage sets are horrible. And so I think most of the films I have are probably from the 1970s on. I think the oldest film I may have is To Kill a Mockingbird. My mother chastised me for that one. She said to me, To Kill a Mockingbird should be the number one film. I said, okay, Mom, maybe. And I think Judgment at Nuremberg is also, I think that's a 1961 film. I think those are my oldest films, and I think they would still resonate with a modern audience.
Let's talk about documentaries for a moment. Many documentaries are very powerful, but they're relatively obscure and unknown. Tell us about your top five documentaries.
Okay. So the top five that I have, let me include top six just because I can sneak Spike Lee in there. I had two that I thought were head and shoulders, I think, two of the best movies ever made. Number one is Darwin's Nightmare, which I have said to people, it is one of the five best films generally, not just documentaries, one of the five best films ever made, and that includes two of the Godfathers. And I'll leave it to you to tell me which of the three Godfathers I'm referring to here. Okay. But Darwin's Nightmare and then Nero's Guest is the number two. And both have the same thing. I think what's beautiful about these things, I don't like documentaries that play on your emotions. I don't like documentaries that connect the dots. I find I also tend to not like talking heads in documentaries telling me what to think. Neither of these two movies do. And both are involved with economic, social, and cultural rights. To me, both films give you a view of human rights that is different from the dominant theme, right? Because what both films are showing is that these violations that we're talking about cannot be localized to the area where the film takes place. Darwin's Nightmare takes place in this sleepy little fishing village in Tanzania. And as the movie progresses, and at the same time you have press reports that there's a famine in Tanzania, and at the same time food is being taken out of Tanzania, and this is this Nile perch fish, and flown to Europe. So at the same time that Tanzania is experiencing a famine, you have food being taken out of a country, right? And no one's connecting the dots at all.
Darwin's Nightmare, a 2004 film, was described as a masterpiece, and you added, and this might well be an understatement.
Yeah,
well, one of your top films.
I'm sometimes go over the top, but it's a great film. But what's funny when I show it to students, the first question I'm asked is that why did you think that was so special? And it's hard to describe. I like films that make you think. This made me think. This made me think in ways that I can't remember another film making me think.
Is the Holocaust a category of its own, separate from genocide or war or not?
No, I don't know if it's that. I mean, I would conclude that in what I do at the back part of the book is I actually will have categories like genocide. But when I'm listing the 50 feature films with 51 documentaries, I don't. But there are a whole host of films that deal with the Holocaust itself. And the list I'm looking at, Schindler's List, The Pianist, Sophie's Choice, Au Revoir Les Enfants, The Killing Fields, Enemies of the People, Sometimes in April, Hotel Rwanda, and The Devil Came on Horseback. So a number of the films do deal with genocide quite generally and the Holocaust specifically.
Are there films that you wanted on the list, but after all, the list is 101 films, and so therefore you had to leave a film or two off the list.
No, I actually had to leave out 265 films. My original, when I submitted the manuscript at first, I had 366 films, and within 10 minutes, the publisher said, "Mark, look at the contract, we want 80,000 words," and I had to slash and burn. I had an entire section on war films, which I think are some of the best human rights films made. Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, The Hurt Locker, all those went. I had a chapter on human rights comedies. I think of that. The Yes Men, who are very funny. I think a lot of Michael Moore movies are comedies. You're laughing, but there's a human rights point being made here. And Academy Award-winning films for Best Picture. So there were a number of chapters. I had to get this thing down. I had to sort of excise 265 films, but many of these will be appearing on the website, watchinghumanrights.com.
Is a Michael Moore film on your list?
Yeah, I think Roger and Me, which I still think of as his funniest and his best. That was before Michael Moore became Michael Moore.
And it's a human rights film?
I think it is, because he's talking about unemployment. He's talking about destitution. He's talking about people losing health care, losing their housing. Again, that's a good example, David, where I see this as a human rights film. Most people would think it's a film about Flint, Michigan and the demise of the auto industry. I think it is about that, but I think there's no safety net for people, right? And that's the point. I mean, there's no safety net or very little safety net. People's, you know, the right to education, the right to health care, the right to food. I mean, all these things people are losing. These are violations of human rights.
What's the most challenging aspect of trying to come up with a comprehensive list when it's 101 films?
Well, one of the fears I had, and I think one reason the first thing was so large, was I was afraid that after I submitted the manuscript to have the book published, someone would say, "I can't believe you don't have, you know, something on it." I've tried to be exhaustive. It's hard, though. I mean, one of the things is if I come across a film, I usually contact the producer and say, you know, I do this. And I do, remember, I also do this for Human Rights Quarterly. So I do I've done more recent films, but there's always this fear that you're somehow missing something. I think I'm not as fearful of that as I used to be. That's one reason I had probably gone overboard at the beginning.
And the list is being updated on the website.
Well, in the sense that I'm not saying taking the 100. The book is the Watching Human Rights 101 Best Films. It's not like there's recent films where I'm saying, okay, I would take out that one at number 50 and insert this one. But the website is trying to do both some of the older films that we talked about, but also new films. It's all the work of one of my undergraduates who said, come on, you need to get into the 21st century. So we've launched the website, and the Act of Killing, which just came out on DVD. It's about the massacre of over a million people in Indonesia after the coup in 1965, and quite a disturbing film. So we're trying to remain recent, but at the same time, bring in some of the older films that got removed from the original book project.
You mentioned Indonesia, made me think of The Year of Living Dangerously.
Yeah, that's not on my list, but that's right. That was the Mel Gibson, Sigourney Weaver. But there's not as much of a political angle in that film, and that raises the question about, well, when does a film become a human rights film? I didn't think there was enough human rights in that film to warrant the designation of a human rights film.
So is there a common thread that ties the list of 101 films together?
Human rights. A theme? No, I don't think so. That I think all of them in their own way talk about various aspects of human rights. But human rights human rights is fairly far-ranging. I'll tell you one thing I don't like. I don't like, maybe I like films that are more tangentially related to human rights. Some of the films I hate would be things like what I call these clunky Amnesty International, very didactic, you know, very preachy kind of films that I don't think reach the audience or that doesn't have the same effect. I don't like those kind of films. I like films that make me think. I like films that deal with human rights issues, but not wagging a finger in my face telling me what to think and how to think.
This just popped into my head, and I have this vision of you and Woody Allen going to see a Shoah over and over again. And I think there's a very funny scene in Annie Hall where he says he can't be late for the six-hour movie.
that probably is true. I had an event yesterday, if I may just relate. I was showing in my human rights class, For the first class, yes, we meet, and I showed them Night and Fog, which none of the students had seen. And then when the film was over, I usually don't talk about the films with my students. And when I use films in class, one of the cardinal rules is just leave. Thank you, I'll see you on Thursday. But yesterday being the first day of class, I decided after the film, we've got another 5 minutes. It's only a 32-minute film, but let me do the role. Let me learn the names and all that. And as soon as I stood up and started to do that, I knew I had made a mistake, because this had affected the students in such a fashion that it seemed so trite. I mean, me standing up, Billy Blake, and this guy, that was a mistake.
Part of the reason you don't discuss the films immediately after with your students is that you want to give them time to think about it, to comprehend what they've seen. And many of these films are very difficult. Yet, in some perverse way, you've watched a lot of these movies. How do you do that? Because many of these films are very, very difficult to watch.
Yeah, or they seem difficult for most people. I'm wondering if I have a character deficiency or something like that. I think for many students, they're surprised. You know, I mean, I've made human rights a career. I mean, I've been in this field of human rights for decades now. And so there's no surprises for me. Every year I run this project called the Political Terror Scale, which codes countries, 185 countries. So you're reading the Amnesty International report and you're reading the State Department report. So I'm not surprised. I think for many students in particular, I think many people generally, I think they're surprised by this. I just think that they would say to me time and time again, I had no idea that this kind of stuff went on. I think then seeing it, and not only seeing it, but seeing it on film, which I think is one reason I like film, because it sort of removes the barrier between, or most of the barriers between the viewer and the event that's being displayed. But I think one reason that most people have trouble with these films is that we used to run the film festival on campus showing one film after the other, and then came to the realization that people would watch one film and then leave. And you know, when we asked people about this, they said, I can't take it anymore. So now when we do the film festival, we do it Monday through Friday, and that's going to be the last week of January. But we don't do one after the other. It's Monday night, Tuesday night, and so on. And that seems to be palatable to most people.
And the numbers indicate that. Some of these very powerful human rights films, people see them, but they only see them once.
Mm.
And so, therefore, the numbers or the return on the investment of making the film is not necessarily all that great, simply because there's no repeat business. And the word of mouth is, this is a very difficult film, and so some people shy away from seeing. How many times can someone see Schindler's List or The Killing Fields? Mm-hmm. It's difficult.
Well, I'm trying to think how many times I've seen these, but I have seen more than I have seen. People have asked me, why would you do this? Why would you even bother with this? I mean, I say it's part of the human condition. I mean, I'm not, David, I've known you for a number of years now. I'm not a depressed man. I'm an optimistic man. I mean, it's funny, one of the comments I made after Night and Fog yesterday is, please don't tell me about the good old days, okay? Please, I don't want to ever hear that again, the good old days. I'm probably one of the more optimistic people in the field of human rights in the sense that I think things are a lot better than they used to be.
Is the filmmaking better?
Oh, the filmmaking. Filmmaking generally is vastly better than it used to be. I mentioned before, last night I watched Gentleman's Agreement. I've got this, I'm going to post on the webpage Oscar-winning films for Best Picture. Going back to, I think, All Quiet on the Western Front. I think that did win Best Picture. The best years of their life, Gentleman's Agreement. A film that I still think is great, Bridge on the River Kwai, about political imprisonment. So, but the older films, that 1947 Gentleman's Agreement, was the dialogue was so phony, or the music, even the great Gregory Peck, I got tired of.
What's out there right now that you think is very good that you've seen?
You mean in terms of feature films or documentaries? Yeah. I thought the Act of Killing was quite good. I'm hoping that has gotten at least a fair amount of play. It was heralded as, you know, these people who are recreating these killings in Indonesia. But there was another film out a few years ago called Enemies of the People. It was a Cambodian film about the genocide in Cambodia. And some of the most unsettling scenes in that movie, Enemies of the People, was some of the Khmer Rouge operatives, lower level, who were recreating how they, usually at dusk, would have about 50 people. And there's something about the way that people can do that, right? It's that, I mean, in other words, they've never paid any consequences for their acts of genocide. They've lived otherwise unremarkable lives, and they have committed these enormous atrocities, and yet they can talk about it as if they were talking about making popcorn. I mean, that to me is incredible. A film I haven't seen, and I'm hoping to, and as soon as I do, I'll post it, as 12 Years as a Slave. I just haven't yet seen that. Now, these films are a great human rights film has an effect on you. It does. A great film has an effect on you.
Mark Gibney is the Carol G. Belk Distinguished Professor in Humanities at the University of North Carolina. His most recent book is Watching Human Rights, the 101 Best Films. Thank you very much.
Thank you.